WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward.
Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
Good morning. It's 8 a.m. I'm Luke Mathers, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The case for Wisconsin's top election official to keep her job just got stronger. Terry Bell reports.
Lawyers for the Wisconsin legislature said yesterday it takes four votes to nominate the Wisconsin Elections Commission administrator to another term. Commissioners deadlocked on Megan Wolf's reappointment earlier this summer. Without an up or down vote, Wolf is a holdover under current state law. For now, that means she can keep her job indefinitely. Yesterday's opinion pits legislative lawyers and the Wisconsin Attorney General against Senate Republicans. They plan to hold a confirmation hearing today. Wolf says she won't be there. Terry Bell, Civic Media News.
The Chief Justice of the Wisconsin Supreme Court will list a job opening for the director of the Wisconsin court system. That is despite the position being filled on an interim basis by the court's liberal majority earlier this month. Chief Justice Annette Ziegler has criticized the majority's changes to administrative rules during the month of August. Emails surrounding the job posting were leaked to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. People who depend on federal food benefits are keeping a close eye on Congress. The current farm bill expires at the end of September, and lawmakers may not renew it on time. Carmen Cumberland is a food bank executive.
What we would like to see is our congressional leaders to reauthorize and increase what food banks are getting in food purchases because of the numbers we're seeing.
Cumberland says the working poor rely on the SNAP program to feed their families. Leaders at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee say its two-year campus in West Bend should not merge with a nearby technical college. Nate Wegehout has more.
The new report comes after Washington County officials recommended merging the UW branch campus with the nearby Moraine Park Technical College. That call came after years of declining enrollment at UW-Washington County. Officials, as part of a university work group, said that instead, the UW campus should simply work more closely with the tech school. The work group found that 45% of students at the UW campus would be less likely to attend a merged school and instead recommended integrating the campus with UW-Milwaukee over several years. Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
An invasive species thought to be managed in the Great Lakes is on the rise once again. Sea lampreys are parasitic fish native to the Atlantic Ocean. They decimated the lake trout population in the Great Lakes throughout the 1950s. Since then, efforts by the Great Lakes Fishery Commission have rebounded the trout and salmon populations. Mitigation efforts slowed during the COVID-19 pandemic, and lampreys are on the rise again. GLFC says the lamprey population will always exist and will need to be continually managed. That's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Luke Mathers, and this is Civic Media News.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. A new proposed bill in Wisconsin would require certain buildings to have at least one universal adult-sized changing station in its restrooms. Introduced by State Senator Jeff Smith, the bill is aimed at helping people with disabilities who need a safe, clean place to change. The bill would only impact new buildings that see a large number of visitors built after next July, and small businesses would receive a tax credit for installing the adult changing tables. Wisconsin Supreme Court Chief Justice Annette Ziegler is accusing new alleged state courts director Audrey Skierowski of illegally approving assignments of reserve judges in her name. According to a report by Wisconsin Right Now, Chief Justice Ziegler sent an email stating, "It has come to my attention that you have been signing my reserve judge orders without my knowledge or approval." Chief Justice Ziegler also said she is posting the state's courts director position for a national search. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
The Brewers make it 9 in a row. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers beat the Cubs last night, the final from Wrigley Field, 6-2 in favor of Milwaukee. The crew jumped out to a 4-0 lead in the top of the first, thanks to home runs by Christian Yelich and Mark Canha, Brewers manager Craig Counsell.
I mean, I think when you start out a road series and, you know, a game that, you know, everybody's anticipating a good atmosphere from the crowd, like just doing that to the home team in the first inning is, well, what more can you ask, really? Couldn't start a game out better.
Wade Miley held Chicago to just 2 runs off 4 hits over 6 innings. The left-hander on what was working for him.
The uses of my changeup. It's been down a lot, like 8% down. And it's kind of rated as my worst pitch right now. And it's kind of been the pitch that's gotten me along for the last couple of years and made a point to throw it more tonight.
Chicago committing two costly errors. Cubs shortstop Dansby Swanson.
I think at the end of the day, like, the biggest thing for us is just playing our brand of baseball. Obviously, we didn't do that tonight. But I know that, you know, we're capable of so much more, and we'll be able to come out tomorrow and play better.
So the Brewers now with a 9-game winning streak. They are 5 games ahead of the second place Cubs in the NL Central. Game 2 of the 3-game series is tonight at Wrigley Field. First pitch 7:05. NFL. The Packers have until 3:00 today to meet the league deadline of a 53-man roster. That's 37 players to be released. The first was veteran punter Pat O'Donnell yesterday. The 32-year-old former Bears punter spent just 1 year in Green Bay. He's been replaced by 24-year-old Daniel Whelan, who's kicked some of the longest punts ever seen on the Packers practice field. Whelan was born in Ireland before moving to Palm Springs, California.
There's a lot of chapters in my story, I would say, but you know, I was about 13 years old and my mom got a job in Palm Springs and she got it and we just basically said, yeah, we're just gonna up and move. We only came here with 2 suitcases, and then I went like straight into high school, and I did not know a single thing about football.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Hey, good morning. Welcome into the Stu Daniels Show on a Tuesday morning. Yeah, it's the 29th day of August. Hope you're having a good day so far. Come on in. Grab a cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Have a seat and enjoy the next couple of hours as we check out some news and headlines and play some cool music. And first thing I want to do is give you some weather information. La Crosse today, sunshine, high around 80 degrees. In Eau Claire, sunshine high around 78. In Richland Center, sunshine high around 82 degrees. Amory, sunshine 77 for a high. And up in Hayward, partly sunny with a slight chance of rain until about 2 p.m. and a high around 72 degrees. Man, you been following the Brewers? I hope so, because it's a fun time to be following that baseball team. The Brewers beat the Cubs last night 6-2, extending their winning streak to 9 games now. And that win puts Milwaukee 5 games ahead of Chicago in the National League Central. Game 2 of that 3-game series is tonight at Wrigley Field. And if you know Brewers fans in other parts of the country, tell them that tonight's game will be shown nationally on TBS. So all your Brewers fans in Poughkeepsie and Miami and Phoenix, they'll all be able to watch the game tonight if they have cable and they can get TBS. And also, I've got some headlines here for you. What do you think is up with Foxconn? Have you heard this latest story? Well, they're putting their empty buildings in Wisconsin up for sale. Evidently, they're not making the big commitment to Wisconsin that they said they were going to. Also, the brightest supermoon of the year will be visible tomorrow night in Wisconsin. And the Biden administration has unveiled the first 10 drugs that will be subject to the new Medicare price negotiations. And new research shows that groundwater in the United States has been severely depleted and it may become an issue. And I think that's where we are going to start today. This is from the New York Times, and it says, America is using up its groundwater like there's no tomorrow. Overuse is draining and damaging aquifers nationwide, a New York Times data investigation revealed. And this is a really important issue because it affects all of us. Doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or a Republican, conservative or liberal, or anything in between or outside or extreme or whatever, this is going to affect you if we run out of fresh water. It says, a wealth of underground water helped create America, its vast cities and bountiful farmland. Now Americans are squandering that inheritance. Times analyzed water levels reported at tens of thousands of sites, revealing a crisis that threatens American prosperity. And it goes on and says, nearly half of the sites have declined significantly over the past 40 years as more water has been pumped out than nature can replenish. In the past decade, 4 of every 10 sites hit all-time lows. And last year was the worst yet. And this story was posted yesterday, and it starts like this. It says, global warming has focused concern on land and sky as soaring temperatures intensify hurricanes, droughts, and wildfires. But another climate crisis is unfolding, underfoot and out of view. Many of the aquifers that supply 90% of the nation's water systems and which have transformed vast stretches of America into some of the world's most bountiful farmland are being severely depleted. These declines are threatening irreversible harm to the American economy and society as a whole. The New York Times conducted a months-long examination of groundwater depletion, interviewing more than 100 experts, traveling the country and creating a comprehensive database using millions of readings from monitoring sites. The investigation reveals how America's life-giving resource is being exhausted in much of the country, and in many cases, it won't come back. Huge industrial farms and sprawling cities are draining aquifers that could take centuries or millenniums to replenish themselves if they recover at all. States and communities are already paying the price. Groundwater loss is hurting breadbasket states like Kansas, where the major aquifer beneath 2.6 million acres of land can no longer support industrial-scale agriculture. Corn yields have plummeted. If that decline were to spread, it could threaten America's status as a food superpower. 1,500 miles to the east in New York State, overpumping is threatening drinking water wells on Long Island, birthplace of the modern American suburb, and home to working-class towns, as well as the Hamptons and their beachfront mansions. Around Phoenix, one of America's fastest-growing cities, the crisis is severe enough that the state has said there's not enough groundwater in parts of the county to build new houses that rely on aquifers. In other areas, including parts of Utah, California, and Texas, so much water is being pumped up that it is causing roads to buckle, foundations to crack, and fissures to open in the earth. And around the country, rivers that relied on groundwater have become streams or trickles or memories. There's no way to get that back. Don Klein, the Associate Director for Water Resources at the United States Geological Survey, said of disappearing groundwater, there's almost no way to convey how important it is, he said. But despite the importance, the view of the predicament has often been fragmented. Until now, this analysis is based on tens of thousands of groundwater monitoring wells that dot the nation. The Times collected data for these wells, which are widely scattered and often poorly tracked from dozens of federal, state, and local jurisdictions. That database reveals the scope of the crisis in many ways. Every year, since 1944, example, more wells have had falling water levels than rising water levels. One of the biggest obstacles is that the depletion of this unseen yet essential natural resource is barely regulated. Federal government plays almost no role, and individual states have implemented a dizzying array of often weak rules. The problem is also relatively unexamined at the national scale. Hydrologists and other researchers typically focus on single aquifers or regional changes. All of this helps enable and reinforce practices that have drained aquifers, such as growing water-intensive crops like alfalfa or cotton in dry areas and over-reliance on groundwater in fast-growing urban areas. Several states, including Texas, Oklahoma, and Colorado, have rules that allow groundwater to be pumped from some regions until it's gone. Some areas have even set official timelines for how quickly they plan to use up groundwater over the next few decades. Oklahoma is working to determine how much water remains in its aquifers, information that state lawmakers could use to set limits on pumping. But Christopher Neal, the head of water rights for the Oklahoma Water Resources Board, said people might not necessarily welcome the government telling them that their land is running out of groundwater. If we start showing that kind of data, that kind of goes into your property values, Mr. Neal said. If we show an area may be depleted in, let's say, 2 years, well, if someone tries to sell that property, they're not going to be able to, end quote. To get the clearest picture possible of the state of groundwater in the United States, the Times interviewed scientists, policymakers, and hydrological experts, in addition to building its national database of millions of measurements from wells used to measure groundwater depth. And we'll get to more of this article from the New York Times about what's going on underneath our feet, down in the ground, essential groundwater that gets drinking water or supplies drinking water for all of us. So we'll get to that right after a quick break. Stick around. It's a short one. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Heading back to class. But when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago, and that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Here's your updated forecast. High temperatures reach up to 77 today under mainly clear skies, winds out of the north, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tonight. Lows level off around 47. Highs level off around 74 tomorrow. Bright sunshine expected. Daytime highs approaching 78 Thursday under clear skies. 85 Friday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air WLAK 1260 AM. Right now 62.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Tom Ankrut. Then at 6, The Maggie Dawn Show. WLAK.
For mine, and we belong together. Yes, we belong together.
Died at such a young age, but left us some good music. Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show on a Tuesday morning. We have 69 degrees in La Crosse right now, looking for a high today around 80, and in Richland Center, 66 degrees, and looking for a high around 82 in that area. Hey, just before the break, we were discussing this new research data coming out from the New York Times about groundbreaking, please excuse the pun, research on the aquifers, where we get our fresh water from. And it seems like things are a lot worse than we thought they were regarding these aquifers that supply our drinking water. This New York Times piece goes very in-depth and in some areas has been tracking water use for 100 years. Not that they have been doing it, the Times, but there are some areas where this has been studied for 50 or in some cases 100 years. I'll get back to this story. And by the way, if you have any comments on things we're discussing today, feel free to call in. Phone number is 715-388-7155. I'll get back to this story from the New York Times. It says to get the clearest picture possible of the state of groundwater in the United States, the Times interviewed scientists, policymakers, and hydrological experts, in addition to building its national database of millions of measurements from wells used to measure groundwater
depth. The analysis of that data, some of it collected from wells that have been tracked for a century, enable the Times to cross-reference water levels over time with crop cover and population patterns. Results were also compared against readings from sophisticated satellites that can estimate groundwater changes from space by measuring subtle shifts in gravity. Recent data from those satellites, which are operated by the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and funded by NASA, also show aquifers in decline. Two major California and Arizona aquifers recently matched or exceeded their lowest levels since NASA began collecting data two decades ago, according to research by Bridget Scanlon and Ashraf Rateb at the University of Texas at Austin. And parts of the vast Ogallala Aquifer beneath Kansas, eastern Colorado, and the Oklahoma and Texas panhandles, an aquifer that irrigates a huge share of the global food supply, last year reached their lowest levels since the start of NASA's program. The gravity measuring satellites are part of NASA's mission to study the workings of the planet. So here is how aquifers fail. There's a little graph here, or I guess an image that shows what things look like under the surface. And it says here, many aquifers, which are layers of water-soaked dirt and rock, are being rapidly depleted, permanently damaging them. The land can settle as water is pumped out, leaving less space for new water to refill the aquifer. And deeper aquifers beneath impermeable clay and rock can also take thousands of years to recharge. And also, climate change is amplifying the problem. Global warming is shrinking the snowpack that feeds rivers, increasing the reliance on groundwater to sustain communities, lawns, and crops, even as rising temperatures mean that plants need more water. A warmer world also causes more surface water to evaporate, leaving less to seep through the ground to replenish overstressed aquifers. Even in places experiencing more violent rainstorms because of climate change, the heavier rainfall only helps so much. That's because much of the water from extreme downpours races away quickly to the ocean before it can sit and soak into the aquifer below. And just a little bit more, it says, it adds up to what might be called a climate trap. As rising temperatures shrink rivers in much of the country, farmers and towns have an incentive to pump more groundwater to make up the difference. And sounds like a bad cycle, if you ask me. Hey, we've got 8:28 right now. Got to take a break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
They're gonna fall. Oh, what did you hear, my blue-eyed son? And what did you hear, my darling young one? I heard the sound of a thunder that roared out a warning. I heard the roar of a wave that could drown the whole world. I heard 100 drummers whose hands were ablazing. I heard 10,000 whispering and nobody listening. I heard one person starve, I heard many people laughing.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. 12:15, Town Call. 1 p.m., The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Justin Finch. Ahead of Hurricane Idalia's expected landfall tomorrow, Duke Energy officials in Florida say they've mobilized more than 4,000 power line technicians Tracking the storm, ABC's Ginger Z in Treasure Island, Florida, just west of St. Petersburg in the Tampa area.
We'll be seeing a landfalling hurricane somewhere in the Big Bend of Florida, likely north of where I am, but the impacts will go all the way south. Talking about storm surge upwards of 8 to 12 feet in the main zone.
Classes canceled today on the campus of UNC Chapel Hill. A faculty member was shot and killed in a science lab. There was a three-hour search for the alleged gunman, who was eventually taken into custody. Students had to shelter in place, but no one else was hurt. In Miami, a Broward County fire and rescue chopper reported engine failure just before crashing into an apartment building. Two people were killed, including one person on the ground. This is ABC News.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Foxconn is selling off two of its large facilities in Wisconsin after years of neglected promises to bring thousands of jobs to Eau Claire and Green Bay. The company said it was building innovation centers around Wisconsin, including an LCD factory that never actually happened. Now those two buildings are being sold off along with any hope of a Foxconn employment boom. Foxconn paid nearly $12 million to purchase both properties and promised to bring 13,000 high-tech jobs to Wisconsin. Wisconsin crime labs are still experiencing a backlog of evidence and court cases because of COVID-19. Funds that were originally intended to help outsource testing has now been reallocated to the Office of School Safety, and finding private labs to help with the work has proven difficult. The pandemic and court backlogs both play a part in these crime lab delays, but Wisconsin is still doing better with delays than other states, even without the added funding. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Hey, this is Joey Erickson at Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. At Civic Media, we love our local communities and want to share your stories. Submit your local event and we'll let our listeners know. Email me at joey.erickson@civicmedia.us.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Big sin.
That's what I'm talking about. Jimmy Reed, Bright Lights, Big City. Man, that guy was one of my favorite blues singers from back in the day. I wasn't around when he was putting records on the charts, but after I got into the blues, I did my homework on him, that's for sure. Jimmy Reed, he actually passed away on this date, August 29th, back in 1976. Had a bunch of big hits in the 1950s and into the early 60s, and rode that blues wave that was going on at the time. And his songs have been covered by lots of people over the years. I hope you're taking notes. There will be a test later on. And speaking of taking notes, man, this story that we've been going over about the nation's aquifers, the groundwater beneath our feet, this new data coming out from the New York Times, sounds ominous, sounds kind of scary even. But now that we have this information, maybe we can do something about it. And by the way, before I get back to the story from the New York Times, just want to give you an update on some temperatures. Eau Claire now at 64 degrees and Amory has 61 degrees. And where we left off in this story from the New York Times, and by the way, I want to go over just a little bit more of this, and then we will move on to other stories that I want to get to today. But it says here that as rising temperatures shrink rivers in much of the country, farmers and towns have an incentive to pump more groundwater to make up the difference. Experts call that a self-defeating strategy. By draining aquifers that filled up over thousands or millions of years, regions risk losing access to that water in the future when they might need it even more, as climate change makes rainfall less predictable or droughts more severe. From an objective standpoint, this is a crisis, said Warigia Bowman, a law professor and water expert at the University of Tulsa. There will be parts of the United States that run out of drinking water, is her quote. The most visible symbol of America's agricultural bounty is the center pivot irrigation system. This is something you've probably seen before, driving past farms. It's a metal contraption on wheels that is attached to a pump and revolves around a central point. A single arm mounted with sprinklers can be as long as a half a mile, dispersing hundreds of gallons per minute from a well 24 hours a day for weeks or months on end. Across much of the high plains, the landscape is dominated by these pivots. But a visitor to Wichita County in western Kansas will see fewer of them. The reason? There's little water left to lay down. The wells have begun to go dry. Irrigation can more than double the amount of corn grown per acre. As farms in the area use up the groundwater, corn yields have declined, erasing decades of gains. The region offers a glimpse into the future of America's farming industry if groundwater keeps getting used up. We overpumped it, said Farron Watt, who has been farming in Wichita County for 23 years. We didn't know it was going to run out, is his quote. American agriculture didn't always rely on pulling huge volumes of water out of the ground. Until the middle of the last century, farmers were mostly limited to relying on rainfall or river water. Smaller wells were mainly just supplements. But advances in pump technology after World War II created an American agricultural powerhouse, turning the West and the High Plains into a bounty of corn, alfalfa, and other crops, delivering yields that surface water alone couldn't support. Last year, the United States produced 39% of global sorghum exports, 32% of soybean exports, and 23% of corn exports, federal data show. America also exported more cotton than any other country. That success has relied on pumping up more water than nature could put back. As recently as the late 1990s, Wichita County farmers produced 165 to 175 bushels of corn per acre, well above the national average. But it came at a cost, requiring farmers to drain the aquifer in order to irrigate their crops. The area gets less than 20 inches of rain a year, on average, about one-third less than the continental United States as a whole, not nearly enough to replace the groundwater being pumped, not nearly enough to replace the water being pumped from the ground. As farmers ran out of water, they increasingly switched to what's called dry land farming, relying on rain alone. And that change is reflected in corn yields over time. Last year, corn growers nationwide produced an average of 173 bushels per acre. But for Wichita County, the yield was just 70.6 bushels, the lowest in more than six decades. The same is true for neighboring counties whose yields have fallen to where they were in the 1960s. Kansas has no mechanism in place to stop its groundwater decline. And politically speaking, if you know about the politics in Kansas, what do you think the chances are that they're going to do anything soon? I would say the chances are pretty slim. The story from the New York Times goes on, says the Kansas Geological Survey produces what it calls a lifetime map for the Ogallala Aquifer within state borders. It shows that large areas already lack enough water for commercial agricultural irrigation. In the parts of western Kansas, where the usable portions of the Ogallala are located, more than one quarter of the aquifer is what the survey calls minimum threshold, according to Brownie Wilson, water data manager with the Kansas Geological Survey. That means it's not possible to extract 200 gallons per minute, a standard threshold for large-scale irrigation. Within 50 years, almost half of the aquifer in that area is expected to decline to minimum threshold. Wichita County and neighboring counties have been one of the first areas in Kansas to get close to the bottom of the aquifer, Mr. Wilson said, but they won't be the last. Tomorrow is here today for them in terms of reduced yields, he said. Some farmers say they can adapt, including Mr. Watt, who cited advances in plant genetics and also more efficient irrigation and better land management. Experts say farmers nationwide should make similar changes to ensure remaining groundwater is used as carefully as possible. But those types of innovations will only work for so long, said Bill Golden, a professor of agricultural economics at Kansas State University. The loss of water is going to outpace the gain of technology, he said. Eventually, we're going to lose. It's not just Kansas depleting its aquifers at a vicious clip. The same thing is playing out in areas around the country. In Arkansas, one of the country's biggest users of groundwater, more than twice as much water is being pumped annually from the main agricultural aquifer as rainfall and other sources put back in, according to state data. In some places, the aquifer has fallen to less than 10% of capacity. The Arkansas Department of State warned this year. Arkansas produces roughly half the nation's rice, a water-intensive crop. And by the way, if you're just joining us, I am going over a story from the New York Times. It's actually a deep dive research study of groundwater around the United States. And getting back to the article, it says Aiden Massey, a spokeswoman for the Arkansas Department of Agriculture, said the federal government was building projects to divert more surface water to areas with groundwater shortages and that the state was encouraging people to use water more efficiently. Arkansas residents who depend on water for their livelihood, quote, respect the need for water conservation the most, she said. In California, an agricultural giant, and like Arkansas, a major groundwater user, the aquifers in at least 76 basins last year were being pumped out faster than they could be replenished by precipitation, a condition known as overdraft, according to state numbers. Unfortunately, this year's unusually wet winter in California, which led to widespread flooding, did only so much to refill those aquifers. That's because much of the torrent surged through rivers and then into the ocean. In Colorado, like other western states, farming, residential development, and reduced precipitation have increasingly strained the state's groundwater. But Colorado has policies that allow its aquifers to run out. Kevin Rain is the Colorado official in charge of allocating the state's groundwater. He said his office does not track how much water remains in Colorado's section of the Ogallala or project how much time remains before that water is exhausted, because state lawmakers haven't given him that authority. But even without that data, Mr. Rain said farmers can already see their wells running low on water. They might say, "Tell us something we don't know," he said. In Maryland, almost three-quarters of monitoring wells have seen their water levels drop over the past 40 years, some by more than 100 feet. Charles County, which contains fast-growing suburbs of Washington, has used most of its groundwater for homes and agriculture, and it isn't coming back anytime soon. Most of the water we're pulling out of the ground is thousands of years old, said Jason Groth, the county's deputy director of planning and growth management. It's not like it rains on Monday and by Saturday it's in the aquifer. Mr. Groth said the county, which gets the vast majority of its water from its own aquifers, will hit a point within a decade where it doesn't have enough water. David Abrahams, communications director for the Maryland Department of the Environment, said the state was improving its data collection and monitoring, and that its programs have a strong track record of success in protecting our groundwater resources. Charles County is looking at piping in water from elsewhere or building a treatment plant to remove salt from the Potomac River, but that would increase costs as much as tenfold. So, looks like there is a possible crisis that we could be having regarding drinking water, groundwater around the United States, and it's definitely time to start talking about it, time to start thinking about it. What can we do? Hey, by the way, if you have any ideas, feel free to call in right now. 715-388-7155 is the phone number. Got to take a quick break. It's a short one, so stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898, but 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Jerry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. High temperatures reach up to 77 this afternoon under mainly clear skies, north winds, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies and quiet again tonight, 47. Bright sunshine expected tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 74. Ample sunshine expected Thursday with daytime highs approaching 78. 85 Friday. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 63.
This summer, Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK has a new starting lineup. Beginning at 6, Up North News. Then at 8, Stu Daniels on Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
Show on a Tuesday morning. We got 8:51, actually 8:52 right now, and 73 degrees in La Crosse. It's 60 degrees up in Hayward. If you would like to join us on the phone, if you have an opinion about anything that we're discussing today, feel free to call in. 715-388-7155 is the phone number. And so far, we've only been discussing water, the importance of drinking water and groundwater and how it's being depleted from the aquifer across the United States. So what can we do? Obviously, regulation could help. That's for sure. It's time to start putting some regulations on the amount of water that farmers and others can take out of the ground. Are there other things we can do? One thing you don't hear discussed very often these days is overpopulation, population control. Is that something that we should start to discuss, that we should start to think about? Are people just having too many other people these days? Are we getting to the point where we're running out of resources? You know that's going to have to be discussed at some point. If you have an opinion, feel free to call in. But before we run out of time for this hour, I want to get to another one of the big headlines in the news. This could affect you if you take prescription pills. The Biden administration has now unveiled the first 10 drugs subject to Medicare price negotiations. Do you think it's a good idea for the government to be involved in negotiating prices for drugs? If they don't, we'll have more of what we've had so far, which is drug companies just making massive amounts of money from people who need drugs to live. I'll give you some key points from this story posted at CNBC, And this was posted this morning, just a little while ago. It says the Biden administration unveiled the first 10 prescription drugs that will be subject to price negotiations between manufacturers and Medicare. And another key point says the announcement kicks off a controversial process under the Inflation Reduction Act that aims to make costly medications more affordable for older Americans. And I'll give you a little bit of this story before we run out of time. It says the Biden administration on Tuesday, today, unveiled the first 10 prescription drugs that will be subject to price negotiations between manufacturers and Medicare, kicking off a controversial process that aims to make costly medications more affordable for older Americans. President Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which passed in a party-line vote last year, gave Medicare the power to directly hash out drug prices with manufacturers for the first time in the federal program's nearly 60-year history. The agreed-upon prices for the first round of drugs are scheduled to go into effect in 2026. So here are the 10 drugs subject to the initial talks this year. First is Eliquis from Bristol-Myers Squibb, used to prevent blood clotting to reduce the risk of stroke. Also, Jardiance. It's used to lower blood sugar for people with type 2 diabetes. There's Xarelto, used to prevent blood clotting to reduce the risk of stroke. Januvia, another diabetes drug. Farxiga, again for diabetes. Entresto, used to treat certain types of heart failure. Enbrel, used to treat rheumatoid arthritis. There's a drug called Imbruvica, used to treat different types of blood cancers. And Stelara, used to treat Crohn's disease. And then there's the insulin pen. Several different manufacturers or several different names for the pen. They're all made by Novo Nordisk. So in other words, insulin. Okay. It says here the Medicare negotiations are the centerpiece of the Biden administration's efforts to rein in the rising cost of medications in the United States. Some Democrats in Congress and consumer advocates have long pushed for the change, as many seniors around the country struggle to afford care. But the pharmaceutical industry views the process as a threat to its revenue growth, profits, and drug innovation. Drug makers like Merck and Johnson & Johnson and their supporters, mostly Republicans, aim to derail the negotiations, filing at least 8 lawsuits in recent months seeking to declare it unconstitutional. The drugs listed today are among the top 50 with the highest spending for Medicare Part D, which covers prescription medications that seniors fill at retail pharmacies. So I think most people would agree this is a good thing, right? If you're a senior citizen on a fixed income, this could make a big difference in how much you're spending per month on drugs. So keep that in mind. Got to take a break. Top of the hour break for the news. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC
app.
News.